Maine's political pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, family-owned and operated since 1936, with locations from Bangor to Saco. Learn more at leeauto.com.
Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz with Maine Public's senior political correspondent Mal Leary and chief political correspondent Steve Missler. And we gather for the first time in the Biden era. More has changed than just the occupant in the White House. The U.S. Senate is now evenly split between Republicans and the Democrats and independents who caucus with them. Steve Missler, that split leaves Maine Republican Susan Collins in a pretty influential position, and she's wasting little time trying to exert that influence.
What we've seen is Biden's economic advisors reaching out to her to try to get her on board with this $2 trillion stimulus plan or COVID relief bill. You know, she's already signaling that it's going to take a lot more to get her on board with that plan. And one thing in particular, that plan that the Biden has talked about includes increasing the minimum wage, the federal minimum wage, to $15 an hour. Senator Collins has already said that's not the appropriate amount. You know, it may be time to revisit raising the federal minimum wage, but $15 an hour may be too high. And then just last night, we heard that she's not necessarily thinking that it's time for a massive COVID relief bill either. That is of interest, I think, to a lot of people, because I think they were assuming that because she and this coalition of Democrats and Republicans back in the fall agreed to a COVID relief plan, Democrats thought that was a starter of, you know, a down payment on a bigger plan. But Collins, I don't think, has ever committed to, a second installment unless it's deemed necessary.
Mitt Romney said exactly the same thing, too. So that seems to be a position being staked out, at least by these moderates.
What Collins told me in an interview was that she believes there's going to have to be another package. It's the timing issue that Steve brought up. Do we really need to do it right now? Do we want to wait a while longer to see how the vaccine distribution is going? If they continue to have the vaccine distribution get screwed up, and we're going to take longer and longer to reach that herd immunity situation, we may well have to have another round of unemployment benefits, extended paycheck protection program provisions, all of that stuff. I think what she's objecting to is not that there's going to have to be another package, that it's not the right time to do it.
Some economists say that it's better to go big right now, you know, pump this money back into the economy. But, you know, the Republicans, including Collins, Mitt Romney, as you pointed out, Erwin, I think even Lisa Murkowski sounds a little bit skittish about this particular plan. She's the senator from Alaska. This group of Republicans, I think, will end up being pretty influential. And so will Angus King. You know, even though he caucuses with Democrats, he may also have some objections to this proposal, although I haven't heard any specific ones as of yet.
You've got this 50-50 balance with the vice president breaking the ties. I mean, that is just a recipe for giving a lot of influence to a very small group of senators on both sides of the aisle. For example, Joe Manchin has come out not liking the idea of another $1,400 on top of the $600. He's a Democrat. You've got this coalition in the middle that you're talking about, Steve, where those folks, I think, all want to have something additional for stimulus, but they want it far more targeted, far more narrowly drawn, and probably of a lesser amount than what the president has proposed.
And Mal, what you're saying about Manchin is interesting, too, because, of course, ultimately, President Biden can get through pretty much anything he wants in this regard through reconciliation, but that means abandoning all hopes of bipartisanship. But it also means in the current Senate, he would have to have the full Democratic caucus behind him, or that just doesn't work.
Some of the Democrats are more conservative or practical or whatever you want to call it, as opposed to the progressives like Bernie Sanders. So the Democratic caucus is not this monolith of Democrats that are always going to be lockstep behind their president. I think you're going to see situations where if you don't negotiate and get that caucus on board, reconciliation is not going to work.
Biden's actually facing pressure from the left flank in his party to do exactly that, to just plow through and, you know, pass this stuff on a straight party line vote. But I think he's already, you know, 2-3 days into his administration, he's encountering just how difficult of a balancing act that will be.
Of course, tricky as that may be, during the Trump term, Senator Collins often sent messages to the president, most often in her interviews with journalists. Trump clearly never paid any attention to any of them. But one suspects that a Joe Biden might be more willing to.
It was curious to me that Collins would make that comment about this might not be the right time for this massive stimulus relief bill. She said that to reporters, and she said that before she met with Biden's economic advisors. I found that interesting, perhaps because she knows that that message will get to the White House even before she does. And maybe there's, you know, maybe there's a reason for that. But it was interesting that it came out in a gaggle of reporters in the Capitol rather than after the fact, you know, after they've actually even had a meeting together.
Well, let's be frank here. I mean, she had no relationship with President Trump at all. In fact, said outright in 2016 that she didn't vote for him. So, I mean, you've got a situation here where we're, in essence, reverting back to the way it was a while ago in the Senate, and that is the moderates in the middle will have a lot of power and a lot of control, and that's right where she is, along with Democrats like Joe Manchin, who we were talking about. Politics is a lot of personal relationships, and we have yet to see the relationship between Collins and Biden play out. Remember, they served together for like 30 years. That's a long time, a lot of bills, a lot of debates. And I think you're going to see her discounting his consultants and advisors and just talking to him directly and saying, come on, Mr. President, you know this is too much right now. Let's put something together we can get through.
You know, we were talking a lot here in this early segment about what it's becoming clear Collins doesn't want Biden to be doing. And whatever is coming next in terms of legislating around the pandemic, do we know what she might want?
She has said, for example, there needs to probably be an extension of unemployment if indeed we continue to have the impact of the pandemic on the economy. Also, hand in glove with that is the Paycheck Protection Program, again, targeted at small businesses that were hurt the worst. So she sees some targeted needs. Where she starts getting antsy, if you will, is more broader stimulus ideas. For example, the direct cash payments. She never supported the $600 until it came out of a compromise among her and other senators. And I don't think she really likes the idea of that much more, because the reality is there's an awful lot of people that have not had the economic impact from this pandemic that others have. I was talking to the state revenue guru, Mike Allen, just a couple of days ago, and he was pointing out economic impact has been very uneven. It's really slammed the poorest part of our community, people with service sector jobs, people working at restaurants, working in hotels, motels. If you go to other jobs, including manufacturing jobs, professionals, et cetera, they're still working. They never were laid off. They never had the same sort of impact. So I think that's where you're seeing Collins say, you know, do we really want to give money to people who are just going to put it in the bank as opposed to helping those who really need it?
Steve, what about this whole question of liability protection for business? That's one of the other things that Republicans have been pushing for a while.
The resistance to it from the Democrats has generally been, we can't let some of these businesses off the hook if they have unsafe work conditions during COVID, right? And of course, you know, Republicans are trying to protect businesses from, I don't know, frivolous lawsuits, you know, a disgruntled employee saying they didn't feel safe or something like that. I don't really know what the middle ground is there, but that's a flashpoint. And I think it will continue to be one. And I think, you know, Collins generally, I think, is supportive of the idea of giving them a little bit of immunity from those type of lawsuits. You know, generally speaking, she's on the side of business. I mean, that's her thing. I mean, that's why she's so supportive of the Paycheck Protection Program, because businesses have taken great advantage of that, and they're very happy that opportunity was afforded to them. So, I mean, I think that that's a key part of her considerations going forward. And I'm not quite sure where Angus King stands on the liability issue, but that will continue to be at least a negotiating point around it, potentially another big package if one is to materialize. That's not a really a good black and white issue, unfortunately, because the idea of liability in any circumstance is always very nebulous. And it's a hard thing to legislate too, I would imagine.
And that's a point that Angus King has made in discussions I've had with him about these various iterations of bills. And that is, he didn't like the Republican language because it was so far in giving absolute immunity. But at the same time, he felt there were places within the current liability law where they might be able to fashion language that would narrow the ability and try to do away with some of those frivolous lawsuits that Steve was talking about. We've got concerns on both sides of the aisle about what that language looks like. In fact, you know, King was saying, you know, they may need a whole separate group, like the one that negotiated this last budget package, to figure out liability language that everybody can support.
Well, the shifting tides would be an apt metaphor for our next subject, what the new president is considering in the case of the Northeast Canyons and Seamounts Marine National Monument. And I guess, Steve, we have to start with a little explanation of what that is, since I don't think most people have been to this national monument.
Yeah, including a lot of fishermen, which is what the whole issue is about. So President Obama established what is now the only national monument in the Atlantic Ocean. And that's this area that you've described, which is off Georgia's bank. And it's really not that close to Maine, but it's become Maine adjacent in politics in so many ways. Because if you recall last summer, President Trump came back and with a stroke of a pen and a great flourish, decided to reopen that area to commercial fishing. And, you know, basically, you know, bragged that it was going to be a boon to Maine fishermen. The problem is, of course, is that Maine fishermen, not many of them, make their way out there. It's actually closer to Long Island, New York, or Rhode Island than it is to any Maine port. Biden has come back and said, and this is day one of his administration, signed an executive order saying that that reopening is basically under review. And you can imagine that it's basically going to end up closed again to commercial fishing. Commercial fishing in that area represents about 5% or less of landings for people who actually fish within that monument. It's a minuscule amount. And so and that data point was so problematic for the Trump administration that they actually tried to scrub it when they were reviewing this monument designation. They didn't even want that included because they felt like that undercut their case that this would actually adversely affect commercial fishermen. It's under review. I would not be surprised if Biden rolls it back and completely, and that place is protected once again. But that was just one of a slew of executive orders that the president has signed in the first few days of his administration. So some of those will have an impact on Maine. The Seamounts one, I'm not sure will be a big impact, but it's certainly newsy just because so much attention was brought to that monument last summer by President Trump.
Of course, the pandemic has affected many, many things, and we are getting close to the time for Governor Mills to deliver her State of the State address. But Mal, have we heard anything about when that might happen and maybe where?
Well, we've only heard so far as she's going to do it. And that's about all that the administration is saying right now. There are a whole bunch of options on the table. First of all, you have to look at what the State of the State is. It's an address to the Joint Convention of the Legislature. So you've got the leaders of both the House and the Senate have got to come up with, well, what day would you want to do this? And then you start looking at where. Do you have the Joint Convention at the Civic Center where you can space people properly under COVID guidelines? And if you do, does the governor address them personally or does she use a video link to address them? How she does it and when she does it is still very much up in the air. The best dates I've heard is the first or second week of February.
No, it's interesting, but I wonder if the timing is affected by the fact, too, that the governor is in the process of being vaccinated against COVID-19. So when you talk about whether she would do it in person or by video or remote, one would think that perhaps after being fully vaccinated, she would be willing to at least appear in person wherever they do meet.
Yeah, that's true. She had her first dose last week, I believe. Maybe after she's had her second, you know, after she's actually been inoculated, maybe she'd be more comfortable doing this in the Civic Center. I mean, she has a lot of options available to her, as Mal points out. And one of them is, the other one is doing what Governor LePage did back in 2016 and just sending a letter. Remember, he did that because he was angry with the legislature because, well, there was a whole list of reasons why he was angry with the legislature. But, you know, he sent a letter as a, almost like a sign of protest. That's not obviously the case here, but she could do that. And it's that's been done before. And LePage wasn't the first one to have done it. You know, the governor's released her budget and she did so early in January. And, you know, what I hear around the state house is that, you know, her state of the state address won't be that much different than her budget, what the budget message she sent out with her spending proposal. So if that's the case, you know, it may not be quite the pomp and circumstance that we're accustomed to when we cover the state of the state. It may be a no frills address that focuses on her spending plan. And that's it. It may be the only thing that she talks about. We'll have to wait to see what happens.
Steve, Mal, thank you both very much, as always.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Maine Public's Steve Mistler and Mal Leering, and that is Maine's Political Pulse. We update the podcast each Friday on Maine Public Radio. You can hear most of it on Weekend Edition Sunday, and we also have excerpts on Monday's Morning Edition. Steve Mistler authors a Maine Political Pulse newsletter. You can find it online at mainepublic.org. And while you're there, you can sign up to have it emailed to you each Friday morning. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. Join us again in a week.